My friends were out spending their money on clothes and all these things, and I wasn't, because I knew that my path to freedom was frugality. I took pride in going to thrift shops. I took pride in buying $1 shirts. I could still be fairly stylish. I'm not the most stylish person, but I can make it work. I could still have a good life and be frugal. And that was my statement to the world.
This is the Personal Finance Show.
Hi, I'm Bo Humphreys, and this is the Personal Finance Show. Jackie Lamb wants you to be proud of being frugal. Frugal doesn't mean cheap. There was a time when Jackie needed to be frugal because she had no choice. But today, for her and many others, being frugal is really about making sure that her spending behavior aligns with her values. It's about making money decisions that help you live your best life. But for many years, Jackie was shamed for her frugality. Whether it's actually a symptom of living in poverty or a value choice, many people still judge frugality and praise free spending. So imagine the validation when Jackie gets to college and meets other frugal-minded individuals like her. Finding frugal friends who celebrated their frugality inspired Jackie to create a blog in 2009 called Cheapsters, which morphed into HeyFreelancer.com, her site about keeping your money in check so you can do what you love. Jackie joined me from Los Angeles to share her personal finance story.
One year, I was maybe 7 or 8. And for some reason that Christmas, I received, no lie, like 5 piggy banks from different people. They're really endearing little piggy banks. There was like little, like prisoners, like jailmen, you know, like in a little cage.
No, I've never seen this.
The weirdest little piggy banks. And I got one that was like a giraffe and just really cute ones. And for some reason, I got that one year for Christmas. And I remember using them for different savings. So like the big thing in my life when I was 8 was there was a fiesta, you know, like a carnival at my church.
Yeah. Okay.
And so the big thing for me and my cousins, cause I grew up very close to my cousins, was to save for the fiesta. So we'd have money for the games and for the food and stuff. So I remember meticulously saving any money I received, you know, just spare change around the house or like allowance money, and putting the coins in each piggy bank and being really methodical about it. And how much fun it was in a weird, like kind of OCD way. Like, so I'd have one bank just for dimes, one for quarters, one for dollar bills. And it was just so much fun. Like, and I don't know why that association was comforting for me. And when I was young, it's kind of a strange memory. And I remember having other piggy banks. Like there was a mechanical one where you'd put coins at the top and then it would just automatically separate them based on coins.
Oh, those are so cool. I always thought those were cool.
Yeah, those were really rad. But that being said, my family had kind of a very mixed feelings about money. Like the earliest memories I had with my parents were like fighting about money because they were divorced. And my mom was a single parent. And so she actually had to take my dad. This is a kind of a dark memory, but like to court for child support, you know, just some bad stuff.
Yeah.
And sometimes just my mom not having enough money. And so she'd have to borrow, like things like that, you know. So there's always that unsettling feeling about money in my life. And we didn't have a lot of money. We were in, you know, for a couple of years, I think we lived in subsidized housing in the Valley in Los Angeles. And so we would collect cans, you know, we were that kind of family who would collect cans for change. And one time my mom had somehow lost a handful of it and she just started crying like uncontrollably. And I think she was probably just stressed out, but just that memory just really hit hard with me. Fast forward to when I was a teenager, my first investigation about money was a zine I created. So I was kind of fascinated by the idea of it. So I read around and I asked everyone I knew, my classmates, friends, teachers, parents of friends, on what their thoughts were on money. And so I went around with this like spiral notebook and a pen and just jotting down their quotes. I asked everyone. I was just so into this idea. And I asked librarians, you know, anyone I knew. And so I compiled all the quotes into a little zine, you know, a little booklet. in Microsoft Publisher back in the day. And that was really my first more or less formal foray into thinking about money. And from then, you know, I've been really interested in budgeting. Like at 16, I opened my first bank account with a credit union. I had a checkbook on balance. And so, yeah, it's something really comforting for me personally. It's kind of a weird hobby I developed at a young age.
Early writing about money is just like, do you remember what might have spurred that on, the desire to make the zine?
Yeah. Well, before the recession, before this whole surge of financial literacy and financial wellness, that's kind of a part of our normal, you know, our culture, I feel like, is there was kind of a stigma with being cheap. And I think there still is. There was a stigma with being frugal. And in college, I was lucky to have roommates. I met two of my good friends who were incredibly frugal in different ways. And we bonded over that. And so it was kind of like our little fun club of being frugal and how excited we got by like finding deals, you know, like freebies in the mail, hacks on saving on ketchup at the dorm room, cafeteria, you know, like things like that just made us kind of bond discounts on things. Because I think for me, I felt a little bit of like embarrassment, or there was that stigma of like, why are you so cheap? But for me, frugality was a form of abundance. My before Hey Freelancer, I had a blog called Cheapsters. I didn't start that until later, way after college, but it was kind of a way for me to assert my frugality and to assert my way of life and to kind of connect with other people who were like-minded. You know, like frugality to me and saving money and being financially well was a form of freedom. It was not a form of deprivation. It was not a form of scarcity.
Yeah, it's funny how people look down on you. You're just trying to save money for other things that are important in your life and not spend money on things that you don't need to. That's like in essence what frugality is, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like trying to find the thing that you need, but you know, not just take the most expensive one or the first one that comes to you and just spend some time. And it pays off. But why do you think people look down on that? Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think being frugal in the old days was like shopping at thrift shops or shopping for a discount made the association that you were maybe poor.
Okay.
And I definitely grew up with that. Like, you know, I grew up with a mother who was, for the most part, she was house poor and cash strapped a lot of the times. And it really was not a lot to do with her income. I don't think it was really because she just didn't want to say no. And she wanted us to have good things and she wanted us to have all the things we wanted. And so I think saying no to something and budgeting maybe and having to make choices was a form of being poor. But it's kind of a paradox because my mom was frugal in some ways, but also very extravagant in other ways. But I really think frugality has a stigma because it may be associated with, like I mentioned, being poor or maybe feeling like not enjoying your life. Like, why do you have to quibble over such a small thing? Why can't you just live your life freely and spend on what you want? Because there is actually like a sexy rock star aspect of like living large, right? Like
that sounds like something a rich person would say.
Exactly. Like a rich person would be like, money is no constant.
You know,
money is no issue.
Yeah.
I can buy whatever I want, whenever I want, as much as I want. And the reality is if you're a truly wealthy person with high net worth, it's the more money you have, the more choices you have to make. And the more difficult choices I feel like you have to make. But there is that in our culture, the whole, oh, I just want to have as much money as possible because that to me is wealth. That to me is being rich. And I know there's a discourse that's changing, but it's still there. Why can't I have magazine lifestyle? Why can't I have the thing in movies or books I read or whatever?
I'm remembering and I remember this every so often in high school. We would it sounds terrible now that I think about it, but we would make fun of the people who didn't have like the nicest clothes or something. And we were not sympathetic at all that they probably could not afford anything. And that was really kind of, I guess that's what kids are like, right?
That's totally what kids are like. I mean, it was kind of interesting. My mom put my brother in a private school and she put me in public school, not because of any gendered thing. It was just at the time there were some gang issues, not terrible gang issues, but she thought there was enough to be a concern.
So to protect him,
So she put him in that. And I remember even in public school, I would just wear a lot of hand-me-downs from my cousin And I think one of my friends even said, "Are you poor?" Like straight up just asked me,
Wow.
like, "Is your family poor?" And it just was such a weird question to ask, but
well, how do you, what do you say? Like, do you
I
remember,
didn't
do you
think
remember
I was
answering
poor.
it?
I had no concept. Like, but my brother had a concept of it because he was older. And I think because he went to private school, you know, that may have hit him harder, but because I was young and I actually enjoyed my life, you know, I always found abundance in going to, there was a store called Pick and Save. It's called Big Lots now.
Okay.
I don't know if they have any where you live, but
I don't
it's
think
just
they do, but
basically,
I've seen them in the States. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a discount retailer. And that was my source of joy. It's like going to the dollar store and my mom gave me free rein. She's like, "You can buy whatever you want because everything's so cheap."
Yeah.
So so I think from a young age, I inherited a lot of frugality because my mom was frugal in some ways. And my dad was incredibly frugal. And so I kind of picked up on that.
So then you get to college and you find your people.
I certainly did.
And that's nice. It's inspiring, right? Because you know, they always say we get to go to college and you'll, you know, if you had trouble in high school, you'll find people who are like you, right? And you did on the
I
money
certainly
side.
did.
Well, when did you write that zine again? When was that in high
I
school?
wrote that zine actually when I was a freshman in high school.
Yeah.
And I didn't actually do my Cheapsters blog until after college. It was during the recession. It was in 2009 because I saw a lot of, well, for two reasons. I had a lot of, I was meeting more people who were incredibly frugal and which in, who inspired me. You know, I had a friend who was so frugal that he was able to, when he got laid off, he had a severance package and he was able to travel around the world for 2 years.
Wow.
You know, stories like that. And my other friend, Dave, who can, he lives in Chicago and he dumpster dives and he just incredibly frugal, but to him it was freedom. And I want to assert that, but I also want to help people learn about deals. So like, how can you enjoy your life for less? So I would create listings on taco deals. I would create listings on free movies in Los Angeles, free music concerts and things like that as a resource. But it also is asserting my like, hey, I'm frugal and this is what, my path to freedom in my own way.
Is embracing your frugality and then using it to help others.
Exactly. And it was very powerful because for a long time, I felt like it was a stigma. It was a source of weirdness or shame. And I am still frugal, but I think now because I'm older and I have a different mindset, it's more about aligning your money and your spending and with your values. And that's the bigger goal here is not necessarily cutting coupons and saving money. It's about how do I manage my money in a way where I can live my best life, which is inspiring, particularly for freelancers, because we struggle with certain kinds of money issues that other people with a 9-to-5 job may not struggle with.
And I want to get into your current business. But first, I want to go back to this is a very interesting thing from your past with the five piggy banks. Was it five?
something like that.
Yeah. So you have this like joyous memory of that. And it contrasted with then the overall memory of living. I mean, you would say in or poverty or semi poverty. If not, it's just such an interesting thing. But like I like that you still held on to that piggy bank memory. What do you make of that?
Yeah, it's like a pleasant memory, and I think it might have been just like a comforting exercise when I was young.
Mm-hmm.
Amid a little bit of chaos, you know, and
sure, your
I
safe
think
place.
At the time I lived in kind of a little bit of a semi bliss, not thinking we had money problems, not thinking we struggled in some ways, but just and that I carried that habit with me. I carried it as a source of structure because I think more than money, I was really as a child craving structure, and I loved going. I was a nerd. I loved going to school. I loved having structure. And I think personal finance is, you know, is people who are really drawn to having financial fitness, I think, like structure and systems for the most part,
you know,
the people I know.
Yeah. The words in my business are organizing and simplifying.
Yeah.
It's
absolutely.
Like, if you like organizing something or you know, like you said, making systems, making processes, helping people break down this stuff that is just sort of a mess to them. Did you carry forward like this saving? So when did you start making actual money for yourself?
Oh, my first job. Yes, my first job. I was 14, and I worked at a. I lived in the Valley, Los Angeles, and I worked at a research library.
Okay.
It was associated with Warner Brothers, actually. It was pretty interesting. So it was just lots and lots of files of clippings, tons of
Wow.
clippings, and it was for people who worked on movie sets or were set designers and needed research, or need to do research. And so I made. I think I probably made $4 an hour.
Wow, okay.
And back in, this is probably 20 years ago, I just remember saving it for just, I loved having my own money. And I remember I was a serious child in the way that you'd ask me what I wanted to do, you know, and some kids say, I mean, I had little whimsical aspirations of being a zookeeper or, you know, what kids think of when they're young, they want to be
Yeah,
a polar bear or a zookeeper, or
yeah.
they want to be a doctor. But I, at the, my core base, my core existence, I wanted to just have a job.
That's what you just I just want a job.
It sounded like such a weird thing, but I knew that once I had out my own money, I could do whatever I wanted with it. And me and my best friend, when I was in middle school, we wanted to have the shopping spree. We wanted to go to the mall and each have like $500 to spend on school clothes or whatever. And so we worked at it. You know, I remember in middle school, I hustled candy. I peddled candy during in the between periods. And I made a little bit of profit selling Pixie sticks and, you know, Snickers bars and what have you. But I remember with my friend, we challenged each other. Let's try to see how much we can make that summer. So we both organized our own yard sales. We both made flyers to do like basic lawn maintenance for our neighbors. And it was just fun because I know. And so when I was 14, when I got my first job, I was just so stoked. $4 an hour, whatever, but it was still my money.
Somebody's paying you, yeah, to do something.
I have no idea what I spent that money on. It was probably just stuff at the mall. It probably was just silly things, but it felt good, you know. And I never really felt like I made much money until maybe a couple of years ago when I did go freelance, which may be a surprise to some people because they think when you become a freelancer, you're going to be making less money. But I've always had. I wasn't making much by the time I was 30 at all. I had a string of full-time jobs that provided some form of security, but I was always very good at managing that money so I could save a good portion of it, more than you would expect from someone who didn't make much. You
Yeah.
know, I made probably a little over 40,000 at 30, which isn't a lot. But I was able to save a fair amount in retirement, save a fair amount of my emergency fund. And then when I got a little bit of a boost in my next job, I was able to just save more of it, which was very empowering.
What did you take in college?
I studied anthropology.
Oh, wow, okay. The
Yes.
study
So
of what's a description of good description of anthropology?
it's just, well, there's cultural anthropology. So it's the study of culture and human behavior
Human
and
behavior, yeah.
society. So, yeah, I learned a lot about observing people and situations, and it actually helped me become a better writer.
Yeah, I can imagine it, that it's
Yeah.
all about, human beings, stories, right? I mean, that's what
Absolutely.
you're telling a lot of. And so you get you what was your first full-time job out of university?
Yeah, I was probably okay. The first year after college, I worked at a coffee shop, and I was interning at like a local weekly magazine.
Okay.
And I was probably very depressed that year. But my first full-time job was at a, get this, an astrological publisher.
Oh, what, like so astrological signs.
Yeah.
Horoscopes.
Exactly. It was such a weird place to work at. I'll tell you, I have a lot of
Wow.
stories about that place. You know, I think I remember going into the job interview, and the interviewer spent about 90% on my birth chart and about 10% on my actual resume.
That's awesome. Of
But
course.
I got the job, and you know, after saving for about 5 or 6 months, I was living at my mom's house. I was able to sock enough money and get my first place, a studio apartment in West LA. And I'm, you know, it was has not been always easy to live on my own, but I've been able to make it work. I've been very fortunate in that way.
And it's your frugality. The frugality, which is driven by, and I hear this from a lot of people who grew up in hardship, is that you don't want to go back to that, or you don't want that to happen to you.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's so funny because even though I grew up with in hardship, I never felt that way. I always felt abundance.
Yeah.
And because abundance through frugality, I think, was my path to, like I mentioned, to freedom. So like you can like say, yes, I grew up in a single parent home. My mom was probably making lower than the household average. We struggled, but through that game of frugality, having fun at Big Lots or Pick and Save or whatever it was called, and being cheap, going to thrift shops, even when I was young, getting things at yard sales, it really just helped me see the joy of life through frugality.
You develop skills that other people don't develop until, well, they out of necessity later on in life, say maybe when they go out on their own, like the ability to side hustle as you were doing with the candy and all that kind of stuff. This is stuff that would definitely help you in life, but that a lot of people wouldn't even think that they would have to ever do because maybe everything was provided for them.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, or maybe their parents didn't emphasize it. And sometimes when I see other people struggle with their finances, I'm like, don't you get it? Isn't it obvious? But then I realize I've spent probably 20 years on this personal, you know, financial fitness muscle.
Sure.
And my partner is excellent at health, you know, at physical health. He's great at taking care of his body. He's great at listening to his body, and he's great at eating well. And guess what? I am the opposite. I'm like a junk food baby. I grew up eating so much junk food, so many like frozen pizzas and just, you know, I've had to learn the hard way to have physical fitness, and I'm still struggling through it. I'm a skinny fat person. So you don't look at me and go, Jackie has high cholesterol and high blood sugar, but I've been struggling with that for the last few years. I've actually been a lot better. But so my empathy comes from people. When I think about my struggle with physical fitness, I realize people struggle with financial fitness is pretty much the same thing. Like I just had so much of my youth, spent so much of my youth splurging on crap food wise and not exercising that it's caught up to me now as an adult. And there's a similar parallel with people with money. Although the thing with money and the thing with fitness is that we have to recognize there's an external thing with money. Interest rates are beyond us. Gender gap inequality, a lot of circumstances, or how we're not just making enough, cash flow issues, right? You know, it's a different game, but there's a lot of parallels that you can do when you're trying to be more financially fit and physically fit. And so to this morning, my partner was like saying, it would be great for you to get a personal trainer. And I'm like, oh, personal trainers are for like vain people who are like celebrities or models. He's like, no, it's not. It's for people who want to like just have better health. And he's like, that's your problem if you have that stigma. And I'm like, what kind of stigma do people have about money people? They probably think money people are just boring and they don't know how to enjoy life. All they care about is money. I don't know. You probably run into some of these stereotypes.
Well, just like what you said in terms of a personal trainer is a parallel to a financial advisor or a coach.
Exactly.
Or anybody to help. People have that reaction to us, right?
They absolutely do. It's like, oh, you just care. All you care about is money. There's more to life than money, Jackie. You know, or they think we're like just all about numbers, and it's not about numbers. And that's a part of personal finance. Numbers and math is you have an accounting history, right? As you know, that's a big part of it, but it's really about values. It's really about how you want to live your life and how you can have a better relationship with your money. And changing your mindset and psychology about money is really the powerful part here.
Because money is connected to all of this stuff. I'm curious though, do you have trouble spending money on better quality food? Is that one of your challenges?
It has shifted quite a bit. And I realized I actually had a talk with Amanda Clayman. I was helping her with some research, just a short interview. And she said on the spectrum of personalities, you are definitely an analytical, wary person. Meaning I have fears that my money will run out. I have fears that this like gravy train of freelance, I've been doing very well with freelance, it's going to just one day, just everything drop. And so I actually have problems spending my money, which is a problem in itself. It really is. So, but quality food, actually, I've been a lot better with. I shop, I get the good stuff now.
So one step at a time, right?
Exactly. And you know, Amanda had some great advice on saying, if you're someone who is analytical, wary about your money, plan for your splurges. So have fun, but plan for it. So I actually have an account for fun. It sounds weird, but I do. I have money designated just for things I want to spend money on. And it makes me feel safe because I know I'm still on track with my other goals.
So did those piggy banks then turn into a whole bunch of different savings accounts then?
Yeah. Absolutely. You're the first person who's made this analogy. I'm loving it. I just never thought of it that way. But absolutely. And now I have sub accounts and I have this more than, it's probably more complex than most people would like, but a little bit of a money flow system I have.
Can you describe it? Can you go into it a little bit?
Yeah. Yes. My favorite topic. So I have just like a main checking account that I pay all my bills out of. And then I have a long-term savings account where I keep all my savings in terms of retirement, vacation, stuff like that. And besides that, I have a second bank account for just discretionary funds. So stuff that changes every month, like my groceries, eating out, going out with friends, buying clothes. And because I feel like going out and the money you spend going out is actually harder to control than stuff you spend on yourself going in. Do you know what I mean? Because it's like social. And so I actually have a sub account, a debit card that I use just for those expenses so I can track it more carefully. And then I also use like apps like no like affiliate links here, but Digit and Acorn and Capital are two of my favorite.
They don't exist in Canada, so.
Oh, okay, all right. So there's some apps I use to like help me save on top. So it's just a psychological win. Like I don't feel I'm on top of my finances, which feels really good. But I also recognize it took me a long time to get to this point. And for people who want to change their finances, just like I'm trying to change my food situation. It's a long game. You know, I have times when I eat really great and I'm exercising, and there are times when I fall off the bandwagon. And I imagine people who are doing their finances are in the exact same boat.
Probably people are more of the up and down situation you're talking about. I think for like in my situation where I went through a big gambling addiction, I think when you go through something that's really heavy like that, you become a little more extreme or a little more on top of things. Like my wife will wonder, like, why do you want to pay the bills like immediately? We have a grace period, you know, that's okay. And it's because if I miss one bill payment, it really affects my credit score.
Yeah.
More so than other people. And so I think, if you haven't been through any kind of financial hardship or a situation that makes you want to be a certain way, then they're varying levels, right? That's why they think we're a little bit crazy, but there's reasons for this, right?
There's definitely reasons for it. And it has to do with trigger points. And I think it's important to recognize our trigger points, because when we have had like an experience that was very extreme or very emotionally charged, we're going to act a little more extreme, and people may wonder why. And it's because there's a trigger point. So like a trigger point I had, and I don't think I've shared this much, is that when I was young, my dad had a manic phase, and he cleared my parents' joint account and went to Paris in search of a lover. It was really crazy.
Okay.
And from then I had this fear of like somebody doing that to me. So in relationships, I can be like triggered by like a joint fund, or you know what I mean? Or I haven't ever had a joint fund with anyone, but that to me is just like a scary thing, because you know, right? And so maybe for you, it's like, because you had experience with gambling addiction, you have different trigger points.
Yeah, absolutely. There are things that are more triggering. And for you and for other people who they might be like, well, you know, why do you have trouble trusting this or that? And you have a good reason to do so. They just don't have an experience like that in their life to tell them that this kind of behavior is possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just really awareness. And I think there's so much psychology that goes into financial wellness. It's not just adhering to a set of rules. If it were that easy, we'd all be doing great.
That's right.
Right. It's a balance between, you know, what's going on the outside of us and what's going on inside of us, I feel like. And it's a balance of just understanding yourself. You know, what works for you is not going to work for the next person in terms of having a game plan or a way of doing this. We all have different values and priorities and stuff. And it's really good to understand ourselves and to honor that. Honor our value system and honoring how we work. And I am actually foraying into financial coaching. I really want to just help people and maybe start with a one-on-one thing and see how that goes. But I think that's having an impact on the knowledge that I've developed over the years would just be really great. Mm-hmm. And it just helps to help others, you know, because as you know, money is such an integral part of our well-being. That's such a big part of our life. And there's a lot of work to be done.
Well, let's talk about how you got finally to this point where you're actually working and helping people with money. Because you started writing the blog in 2009, And where were you working at that time?
I think I was working at like a labor union for film directors. I had a full-time job, and it was just totally a hobby, as most blogs are, for fun. And I loved it. It was just a fun thing to do. I didn't have an outlet for writing besides writing fiction. I didn't have an outlet to share my frugal thoughts. And it was a way for me to connect with other like-minded people, which was actually the best part, I think. Making those connections, so much fun.
And how did we do that in 2009? How did people become aware of your blog?
I just shared out on I think Facebook was still there. I was around, so I just shared on Facebook. I told my friends about it. But I remember my first interview was with, I don't know if you think I posted it, was with a woman from like the Budget Babe. I think her name, I should have a site called the Budget Babe or something like that. And she was all about couponing. And so, I had a lot of, I did a lot of interviews with friends or people I found out who were frugal. I don't know. I actually probably was terrible at promoting it, but it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun to create. And it led me to FinCon. Yeah. FinCon was in 2014 was my first FinCon. And I was so ecstatic. Oh my gosh. People who are think just like me or into what I'm into. It was our, as you know, it's our version of Comic-Con. And I didn't realize how big personal finance writing was. I thought it was just going to be a bunch of bloggers hanging out. And I didn't realize there's all these financial industries and bank,
I
apps
had
and so much
no
stuff.
idea. Like it was
Right?
when I was just writing to promote my future coaching business that I was launching. And then it turns out there's a whole community. And then of course then the podcast came later. And then of course like everybody's podcasting now. And it's just crazy to find. It's the best thing is to see someone at FinCon sort of for the first time discovering all of this.
Right,
And it's like,
it's really exciting to see
what
and
is
witness
this?
that.
The possibilities, right? In terms of generating money for yourself. So you're being really frugal with your day jobs at this point, and you're like socking money away. Is that, are you able
Yeah, I
to?
think even when I was making a low income, okay, my first job, I remember making $15 an hour. So I was living off of 30,000 a year, and I did some side hustling. I didn't do a lot. I did some side hustling here and there. And I remember my first year, I signed my lease, my first lease ever as a grown up. I was so terrified of having to move back home. I didn't really spend much money that first year. I spent very little. I think I might have bought, I don't remember, besides the bare necessities, maybe some clothes once in a while, but just kept it to a bare minimum. And I think I saved maybe 5,000 that year. I don't know. I remember being proud of how much I was able to save despite having very little left over. And I was able to start going on trips. They were not extravagant trips, but it was just stuff I was not able to do when I was younger. I just didn't have money. Like having money in college was having financial aid and having $200 in the bank, And that was just how my concept of it. And I remember being back to college, I owed like something happened with some library books, me and a friend, and I owed like $300 on these library books, and I
Oh,
was just
no.
so crushed. That's so much money. But now that I'm older, I was able to see like I think my take home pay, making 30,000 a year is maybe 1,800 a month, maybe. That's not much. And my rent was 675. So, one third of my income was going toward rent. And so I just really had to budget carefully. And, saving that much amount of money was great. And what happened was when I got and I progressed, I actually took a pay cut for my next job, believe it or not, because I was just so unhappy at that place. I just needed a way out. So I took this job that seemed better than it was. But I got promoted after like the first 7 months. So that was great. And but every time I got promoted and I got more money, I didn't change my lifestyle. I stayed at the same place for 5 years. I didn't really do much of an increase on my regular in expenses. So lifestyle inflation was very minimal. And when I did do lifestyle inflation, like I moved to a slightly larger apartment for like 100 more, I found a place in my budget to trade off instead of, so I would just, okay, if I'm going to move to this apartment that's like 125 more, 200 more, I might sacrifice saving. What did I do? I think I committed to saving a little bit less in my retirement. And I also paid off my student loans. And so that money went toward my rent, things like that. Just always constantly looking at trade-offs and finding ways to be to be live as frugally as possible so I could have more savings.
Well, this is a great example of how, you know, people think that they can't save or even live, you know, on such a low income. What normally a lot of people would do is turn to credit.
Right. And to this day, I've paid my credit, knock on wood, I paid my credit card in full every month.
Wow. That's pretty awesome. Why do you think everybody just, well, maybe it just depends on where they came from, right? If they're used mm-hmm. to living in the lap of luxury or whatever, and then they're out on their own, they think that they can still keep doing that. And maybe we're teaching or putting people out into the world with the wrong information.
Yeah, it's hard. I totally think that could be true, but I think it's a lot of it is just how we were brought up. And like, and I remember this quote, like, if you want to live like nobody else, you have to do things like nobody else.
Yeah.
So for me to be able to save that much and be frugal was like going against the stream. Like my friends were out spending their money on concerts. I did too, you know, going in and out, spending their money on clothes and all these things. And I wasn't, because I knew that my path to freedom was frugality. I took pride in going to thrift shops. I took pride in buying $1 shirts. I could still be fairly stylish. I'm not the most stylish person, but I can make it work. I could still have a good life and be frugal. And that was my statement to the world. And I was very strong about it. And some people judge, some people didn't understand, like, well, like living an ascetic life is not for me, you know, and living. And it's like, isn't your success have to be related to your image?
Yeah,
like,
no.
You know, the more money you make, the more you can flash it. I'm like, no, I've been driving the same. I just bought my first new car in 15 years. So I've been driving the same car since I was 21, since I was in college. And that to me is not a sign of any success. Having another car just means having to finance something potentially, and you know, everyone's different. So I think it's a really complex value system we live in, but it makes sense. It's like, if you have money, don't you want to live and enjoy the here and now versus banking on your retirement? Like, that's boring. I get it. So there has to be a balance. And I think the notion that like you have to show off your wealth is another thing that really gets to us, or comparing ourselves to our neighbors or our peers is another thing. It's like, if I had lived that way, if I had just spent all my money every paycheck, so it went to zero, I'd have nothing now. The choices weren't hard for me, but they might have been hard for a lot of people. And I understand that, you know, yeah. Being frugal isn't for everyone.
No, it's not. It seems like we've all so easily just, you know, glommed onto this commercialism thing. You know,
yeah,
it's like whoever absolutely. Had the biggest voice, the people with the big voices decided that this was the way. And since frugality wasn't about spending money, they just at the same time just like shit all over that concept. And so here we are thinking that to be normal and accepted in life, we have to spend and go into debt. It's really just all backwards to me.
It's super backwards. And it's like, how did we get to this point? Right. And I totally agree with you 100%. It's also like when you were a kid, what did you imagine your life at 30 or 40 to be like? You know, you probably want to be comfortable. And sometimes people, they go into debt to have that vision or to fulfill that vision of comfort or success. And I remember I have a friend, I know a guy who actually, he makes very little money. I won't say how much, it's not a lot, but his car payment is 1/4 of his take home pay, 1/4.
Yeah.
Like, so I asked him, why did you do that? It's clearly like, you know, that car payment is way more than you can afford. He's like, I just always felt like I deserved, keyword here, deserved a new car. And I needed it now. And I just wanted to get it. I'm like, you deserved a new car. Okay, but do you deserve all this like stress too?
Yeah.
All the financial stress that comes with this humongous car payment for your take home pay. You know, and I think people have to recognize it's not about deserving anything. It's about, is this the right time for me to be doing this? Yeah, is this the right time for me to be making this purchase?
You can have anything you want. You just can't have it all right now.
Exactly. You can afford anything, but not everything. And I think there's trade-offs in my life. It's like I buy a lot of my furniture, you know, used or secondhand, but I spend a little more on a couple of key things, which bring me enjoyment, you know, but I don't spend my money on all areas equally, for sure. I would not be able to afford all the, like, save for my goals and do everything I want to do that way. And it's freed me up a lot. It's like, because I don't live as frugally as I used to. I do spend more in clothes. I do spend more money because I have more, but I also am still managing my money in the way where I'm watching it. So I'm making sure I save for the right things. So the tenants are still there. I may have a little bit more to play with, but I still don't go crazy, you know, because you mentioned it's a muscle I've developed as a fitness I've homed into for many years for whatever reason.
You are, you're mindful about your spending. And as you said, it's about values and
it really is.
What is important to you. You kept writing about this stuff for years, and eventually you kind of morphed it over into a freelancer focused thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's what happened was in 2014 at my first FinCon,
yeah,
I met the VP of talent at Contently, which is a content platform that connects brands with talent or writers. I had no idea what Contently did. I knew they had a great freelancers magazine. And so I was I was doing this marketing game where I brought gigantic dollar bills and I had everyone write a money tip on the dollar bills, took a photo and posted on Twitter and tagged
nice.
Them.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, it was a fun little game. It was a great way to meet people when you're just new. And so we hit it off and he was like, I didn't know Contently was a platform for writers. I just thought there was this magazine I wanted to write for them. And so he put me on a team. And from then, my first month, they really needed content. I made about the same writing 8 or 9 articles that month, moonlighting, than I did in my day job.
Oh, wow.
So I quickly saw the potential for freelancing, especially in this space, in the money space, working for brands. But before that, a lot of my friends are artists, are creatives. Before I even, you know, did the transition to freelance about 4 years ago, a lot of my friends had a lot of issues with money. And so I decided I wanted to talk more about that. Because the issues with money I'm finding is that artists actually don't have any issues about selling out. They have the same, they want to make money. A lot of artists and creatives are entrepreneurs. They actually are very business savvy. It's just, you know, the market is tough for an artist or for a creative, or it can be. But I realized, you know, issues they share is like dealing with budgeting, variable income, dealing with like self-employed taxes, things like that, that other people don't have to even think about or care about.
If they're employees, yeah.
Yeah, and so I need to actually go back to the blog, and I have all these ideas on just personal stories I'd like to share, experiences as a freelancer, building my career, building my business, and also helping fellow freelancers with their money, because that's something we all struggle with.
Yeah, I liked what you said
Beyond the Dollar.
Yeah, Beyond the Dollar with Sarah Lee Kane, where you talked about the difference between artists and creatives. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So there's a lot of overlap, but basically artists are creative people who want to create a business or create a career based on their vision and based on adding to culture in their own way. By means of their art, or they make music or some sort. And creatives are people who use the same skill sets. Like they might be illustrators, they might be designers, they might be writers or an artist too. But they make money based on fulfilling a client's needs. So working for brands or companies. So I think of myself definitely as a creative. However, there's overlap, as you know, a creative who makes money as a content marketer or a freelance writer like myself. I write fiction, or I used to do more fiction writing. I used to write poetry. I have artistic aspirations, and same with the artist. You know, sometimes artists who want to actually fulfill their need and for vision will take jobs as a creative. And so it's a shared set of skills for the most part, but there's just how you make your money and your career path differ. And to me, that's the main difference between a creative and an artist.
Yeah. I'm probably somewhere in the middle, in that I really don't want to do what anyone else tells me to do in terms of creating things. Like,
yeah.
So I have this podcast where I can, you know, basically do whatever I want with this, and, you know, in terms of where the interview goes and who I have on and the topics that we discuss and all that kind of stuff. And I can tell stories, right? I don't have to meet anybody's criteria or anything, and I don't have any sponsors right now, but I wouldn't get any sponsors who would try to direct me anyway. I'm also okay, you know, writing if I like a brand, I'll write something that is, you know, aligned with me, but with them too, and help them out, and they help me out, and I'm okay with that as well. But yeah, it's an interesting line, the difference between the two, and they need different kinds of help, I guess.
They definitely do. And I feel like there's not enough conversation. There's a lot of conversation for creatives, how to make money, because I feel like it's definitely easier.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not a lot of conversation on artists can make money, because a lot of artists I talk to, they find it hard. I mean, the system, the gallery structure, and the way they make money is changing. You know, there's you can make money going through a gallery who usually takes 50% of each piece you sell.
Oh, wow.
Or you can, you know, sell it on Instagram or create your own shop and be more entrepreneurial that way. But there's a lot of personal attachment to the work that artists make. So sometimes they can find it hard to price something based on that, because they're not looking at an objective point of view. I find that to be an issue. And there definitely has to be more support, I think, for artists on how to make a business or create a career, a viable career on their art that's outside of patronship, you know, like getting a patron. I mean, the patron model will still always be there. Getting sponsors is a form of patron, being a patron, right?
It is, in a way, yeah. But you mean the old school, like Leonardo da Vinci.
Right, exactly. Or it's a modern, you know, the modern patron system, but also it's, or going beyond like an arts grant, which is kind of like, you know, a nonprofit or organization is giving you money for a period of time, or a residency. Those are all common ways artists, but I feel like there's a distance between society and their work when they do that. You know, you're working in a bubble when you go and have a residency somewhere. But, and I think there is definitely a space to be part of the market, you know, as an artist. And it's becoming more apparent, because artists have more and more avenues to sell their stuff and to mark and to, you know, make a living for themselves. And I think it's going to be, it's going to grow.
And when you, when you go and take your, I feel like you're going to do the coaching thing.
I think so. I think there's a lot of energy for me there. It's a lot of, I think it would be rewarding. And maybe off the record, maybe I could talk to you about your coaching business, because I'm so new.
Yeah.
If you're interested in.
Well, I mean, what I'm thinking is you would, these would be your clients. So you would focus on the artists and the creatives, right?
Yeah, ideally. I would love to do that.
I mean, I feel like you're already doing it. So, I mean, if it just means you want to go through one of the programs in the States that gives you an official...
Maybe it's unnecessary. So.
Yeah. Like, you could probably just start doing it already.
That would be great.
That sounds great. So how do people, like, read more about you or... ask you questions or, you know, ask you to be their coach?
So my blog right now is Hey Freelancer, and they can find me on there. They can follow me on Twitter. I think it's Hey Freelancer CO Co. Or they can email me. Is it okay to give people my email?
Absolutely. Well, if you want,
Oh, yeah. It's Hey Freelancer at Gmail. And they can just Google my name, Jackie Lamb, and there's articles will pop up about money and my ideas and my money. Yeah, I've been doing a lot of writing for freelancers on money and stuff. So there's a lot of stuff out there.
Awesome. Well, you know, thanks for sharing your story about frugality and just like, yeah, you know, just it's an inspiration for others who maybe, you know, also living this way and are still feeling the stigma. So it's great to just talk about this stuff and spread the word.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. It was a lot of fun chatting with you.
If you like this episode, please subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, please leave me a 5-star rating, a review, or both. If you're already a subscriber, you're awesome. Please join my Facebook group so I can thank you personally and get to know my subscribers. To find the group, go to Facebook and search for The Personal Finance Show. Thanks for listening to this episode of The Personal Finance Show. I'll be back next week with Nico Barraweed, Head of International Business at Nova Credit.